Doug, thanks for giving us a few minutes this afternoon. Again, our condolences here at the station on the passing of your dad, who, you know, they throw the word legend around a lot, and in this instance, it applies. Just you know, your thoughts as we remember Dick Pertell.
Sure. Well, Dad loved Hartford and Connecticut, and he loved being a part of WTIC. It had such meaning for him because as he was growing up down in Fairfield County, he would listen to it and aspired to be a part of it. He would listen to people like Fred Wade and Ross Miller and, of course, Bob Steele. So he came to Hartford. He waited for his opportunity to audition, and that was quite a rigorous experience, I understand. But once he got it, he fulfilled all of his dreams.
He had links to, you know, you ticked off some of the names, but links to some of the people that actually founded this radio station, did he not?
Yes, he did. And that really meant the world to him because he grew up during the Depression, and he grew up in that era of network radio being the prominent entertainment medium in America. And so he was just amazed that at age 25, when he got to WTIC, that he was working with people who had been there before he was even born, not just personalities, but also engineers and managers. So he was able to learn from them what it was like to be part of radio in its beginning and through its heyday, and then carry that into his work in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
You know, this industry, radio in particular, Doug, as you probably well know, has gone through myriad changes. What were his thoughts, you know, later on to, you know, what the industry is now to, you know, what it was when he first started?
Well, we would talk about that a lot. And he was always fascinated with technology and appreciated the fact that worldwide listening to any radio station is possible, and on-demand listening was becoming more part of the norm. But he definitely had concerns about the integrity of the medium because in the competitive landscape that it exists in now, there are a lot of different forces shaping the content. And in his era, there were not nearly as many outlets as there are now. So there was more of a community aspect to radio, the commitment to the community in radio in his era than perhaps there is today.
Now, you raise an interesting point. I mean, obviously, we've got, you know, a ton of social media platforms. We've got 24-hour news cycles. When, you know, he worked and when many others worked, it was really, you know, television was in its infancy. And, you know, the only way folks really got their information was from newspapers and the radio.
That's true. Absolutely. And one of the things that he found to be most fulfilling would be breaking news coverage for things like the Great Northeast Blackout of 1965 or the ice storm of 1973, because people really depended on WTIC specifically, but radio in general, to get information that wasn't available through any other medium. And so it had to be right, it had to be accurate, and it also had to be reassuring. And that fit well with his style.
About 10 years ago, I put together a piece for the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination, and I used some of your father's sound from that day, along with others that were on the air. I think Floyd Richards and Bob Ellsworth, who was actually a former
right.
teacher of mine way back when. What specifically did he think of that day? That was obviously, you know, to say the least, something that, you know, the folks that were alive then anyway know where they were when it happened.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, he recalls recall the chaos of that day, the dearth of information. And within the first half hour to hour, when there was a need to concentrate on the story, but not getting any details, not from the NBC radio network and not from the wire services. So that was very stressful. But he also recalled how beautiful the coverage was after that hour, how professional, how insightful, and how patriotic it was. So that meant a lot to him. But another thing that he would talk about in regards to the assassination of President Kennedy which happened a long time before I came on board, is he would tell me about how the entire Hartford area shut down, post offices, church services, schools, just everybody just seemed to come together in a moment of mourning that, of course, lasted 3 days, and that made a profound impression on him.
And it was also a time, Doug, when he first started and in the 60s, when the folks that were working here in news would switch back and forth, I guess, between the radio and the upstart WTIC television, Channel 3, right?
Oh, absolutely. And he went back and forth in what we used to call, or what was called, broadcast house, from radio studio to TV studio, you know, without much of a thought. It was one assignment and then another assignment as part of a normal workday. But he anchored newscasts on Channel 3, hosted public affairs program, started the show Face the State, but then he would go back to radio, and he would anchor newscasts there, host magazine shows there, host a record show there. So it was a different era in that you needed versatile people who could do a multiple of different assignments inside both mediums.
And that's, I find now that, you know, I've done this for, you know, almost 40 years professionally myself, and when I started, it was it always seemed like, you know, folks would, you know, maybe start their careers in radio and then gravitate toward television. And I always thought that that was a great way to, if you were, your television was ultimately your thing, you start in radio where, you know, you can hone your writing skills, hone your ad-libbing skills and such. Do you kind of think along those lines too?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, he started in radio, started down in Norwalk, Stamford, Bridgeport, Greenwich, then came to Hartford. He definitely thought that radio was a great way to learn how to write and to present yourself, and that the visuals came later. And as the industry changed and television and radio diverged, like you suggested, John, it was he thought that was lost, and he noticed that in the way that television reports, that it's not nearly as structured and as insightful as it used to be, because people knew how to write and speak for radio.
Yeah, that's I tell you, that's a huge bugaboo of mine, but that's, you know, another story for another time. I could talk about that chapter and verse all day. But after TIC, Doug, I guess he worked down in D.C. at Voice of America. Is that correct?
That's right. He worked at KISS in Hartford for several years after TIC as the vice president and general manager and also the morning show host. But then he went to the Voice of America, where he did several things over the next 22 years. But among them were programming a Voyager van. They called it the Voyager, and it went around the country to collect human interest stories, a lot like the old Charles Kuralt van did. He managed a network of FM top 40 stations called VOA Europe and conducted affiliate relations for them later from Munich, Germany for 2 years. He started a global talk show program called Talk to America, and he also hosted another show called Dateline Bosnia, which was all about the war atrocities when Yugoslavia fell apart. And, oh, one other thing that occurs to me is that right after the 9/11 attacks, he was assigned the project of setting up local FM stations in Afghanistan that broadcast in Dari and Pashto, the local languages, so that we could get, after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, we could get local but accurate information into the Afghanistan area.
What a career. Doug, I can't thank you enough for coming on with me for a few minutes, this afternoon. Yeah, you know, obviously, I know it's a difficult time for you and your family, but it's been great talking to you, and I've learned a lot in just these last 10 minutes. So, thank you so much again. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time. But since we're down in Washington, is there a way for us to find this online?
You know what I'm going to do? Maybe what I'll have our executive producer, Joey Burgoyne. Maybe I can have him.
I remember that name.
Yeah, I'll have him. I'll see if he can edit this and we can throw it up on our website. I think that'd be appropriate.
Oh, that would be nice if you can. Yeah, I remember Joey was there 10 years ago for the JFK 50th anniversary.
Okay, all right, yeah. Yeah, he's still here. So a few of us are still
good.
A few of us are still hanging around.
That's wonderful to hear. And really, you know, Dad loved WTIC, was grateful for his experience there. And it may sound trite, but it would mean the world to him to know that the station is interested in his passing.
Absolutely. Now, how many years did he have here? He started, what, in the 50s and left, what, in the 80s? So he probably had, what, 30 years here? Am I correct?
Not quite right. He was in the area for 30 years.
Okay.
But it was WGTH, which became WPOP from 55 to 56. Mm-hmm. Then it was TIC 56 to 77,
okay.
And then KISS from 77 to 84.
56 to 77. Oh, geez, that's over 20 years, so that's a real long time to stay in one place. A lot of people don't stay in this industry that long, much less one place.
And the irony of that is he never expected to leave. When the stations were sold and, you know, Channel 3 became WFSB, and he decided to stay with radio because he knew all of the radio people. The, you know, the managers that hired him were still the managers of the radio station. That made him more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But it also meant that it wasn't backed by the Travelers any longer. And
right.
So he, you know, the whole culture changed.
Gotcha. Doug, thank you so much again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.